This is Phantom Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Jen Kilborn. For the first time, you're making Woo profitable. And I want to thank you for being a guest on the Phantom Electric Ghost podcast. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me, Phantom. I appreciate it.
Well, it's always great to talk to new people. Just a couple of housekeeping things. We are a featured podcast on the listening on the Newsly network. You can see that little icon up there. It says listen on Newsly. And that's an audio-only platform. We're a featured podcast. If you use that coupon code at Ghost, you can check that out for 30 days. No cost to you. And you can see, listen to that at your own convenience. We'll be on Newsly later tonight. And then the other thing is we have your www.everydeer.com/this-is-your-sign. That you don't have to remember because you can just click through everywhere we're published. That link will be clickable. So again, thank you for being on the Phantom Electric Ghost podcast. So one of the first questions, a set of questions we ask anybody that's on the show is like, what motivates you and why do you do what you do?
Okay, great. Well, big question. Why do I do what I do? And without going long story today, as I would say, how I describe what I do is really very much working with people who are creative and who have something that they want to teach or share or have a vision for an expertise that they want to bring online. But these days, though, I'm not just really consulting with them about the strategy and about helping them, you know, get their whole, you know, get their course, get their teachings, get their stuff out online. I'm really focused on them as a person and helping them create a business model that really is for them. Like there's been, you know, now we've been in online courses, digital marketing has kind of become a popular thing for people to add on to an existing business. And I have been in the online course world since 2016. And so that was kind of early on. And so early on, there seemed to be a lot of template sort of cut and paste strategies, you know, for people kind of promising this whole passive income thing, you know, create digital products, create courses. And I saw that work for a lot of people. I mean, I got into it in sort of a standard kind of way, not really knowing all of the outcomes that it was going to open up for me in my business. And now that I have moved into helping people do some of the same things that I have done, it is with my own experience in mind that really allows me to say, hey, we're not just trying to make another quick buck here. You know, these are people who really have something really significant that they want to share. They're very mission driven. And so I'm really trying to help them bring together a business plan and strategy that is for the long term, like the long term vision of what they're about. So I guess, you know, what motivates me is continuing to want it, well, just the desire to be a voice of sanity, hopefully, in the online business world, not over promising things that are unrealistic, but also making it possible for people who didn't really have someone like me to come along and say, This is a huge opportunity for you to impact people through the internet, but still in a very authentic way. So I guess that would be the shortest way that I could possibly sum it up at this stage of my career.
Yeah, that kind of gets to the point of like the topic of monetizing spiritual gifts, because a lot of times you see like, you know, stuff on the internet, you know, like podcasts, a lot of them are kind of like infomercials or sales pitches for widgets or services or plans or whatever. So, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
And so if you're a person that's like, well, I don't really sell a widget. I don't really sell like a service, for say as I was selling it, like this ideal of like this spiritual awakening. And maybe you can think of that as a service model, but a lot of people might feel like, well, I don't want to monetize that because it seems like that's offensive, like to the nature of being spiritual. So it's just some people might be like into things that, well, like, I don't know if that's going to really work because I'm trying to like expand people's minds and maybe
that's
like
exactly it.
Look for donations rather than people paying up front. And so they're kind of scared to, to ask for money. It's like being a musician. It's like, we're scared to ask, can you help us on a campaign? Can you help us me pay for my mastering costs? And people are like, well, no, well, I don't want to pay. I don't want to pay for music at all. They think it should be free. So you're like, okay, well, how do you get people to start to pay for your merch? or for your shows is like, how do you get people to actually want to do that?
You could not be more correct. That is actually exactly one of the problems that I see with this type of teacher, this type of leader, is they usually get into it knowing that they have a lot to give, and they go into it thinking, okay, so if it doesn't apply to me, they think that it doesn't apply to them, that they maybe need to monetize like a spiritual platform or something like that. And they just say, we always want this to be free. We want people to come and, you know, get the information they need, get the support they need. But without the understanding of how difficult it is to scale something like that. One, because they don't realize once you open up that door, people will come flooding in. If you're creating a community, you know, around that concept, it demands, it's like a snowball effect. It's going to demand more time, more resources. It's going to cost you something, even when you are treating it as sort of a mission. And and so what I end up hearing from people is they're like, well, I started this thing, and now it's become its own monster, and I don't know how to, you know, I don't know how to fit, you know, I don't know how to fix that.
Yeah.
Right. Because they didn't, if they didn't monetize it properly at the beginning, because they didn't know what they didn't know, and they were following their intuition. They consider themselves highly intuitive people. But when you go into the online business world, I say intuition will only get you so far, because once you have created a problem that then is at scale, where you're giving away time and effort for free, it is very hard, you know, not impossible, but it's very hard to fix that. And in a way that, like you said, that is in alignment with who they are, because they didn't, maybe they didn't think that it felt right to charge people anything ever for spiritual information. So yes, you have really framed the problem accurately. And I would imagine a lot of musicians do have that same problem, because they're in it for the love of it.
Yeah, well, it's a problem, because like a lot of our streaming services, they really don't pay us. They pay us like percent, like a 0.04 of a penny.
Exactly.
Right. And so the only way you really make money as a musician today is through sync licensing, through concerts where you actually work with somebody and you get like the lion's share of the ticket price, unless you get ripped off, and you don't. And a lot of it is like, you know, selling vinyl and actually paying up front for the vinyls. Like on a vinyl record, it costs $30 or $50. The artist can make 70% of that compared to if they were trying to sell it on Spotify, right? You could actually make more money selling vinyl than you're making Spotify all year. It would maybe only a couple thousand copies.
Right.
So you can make these micro plans that actually can generate large income. I mean, Prince used to talk about it all the time. If I own my master, if I own that record, instead of being paid by the record company 30 cents on an $18 record, I make $9. So that means I can sell less of them and make more money.
Exactly.
So sometimes you can come up with ideas that, well, that's artist, but that kind of applies for anything. Like if you start to figure out, how do I monetize like spiritual stuff, or how do I monetize like a service plan, like you're trying to, you know, whatever you're doing, you can actually start to, you know, make things exclusive. You know, like Instagram has these things where you can subscribe to your channel, and then you send people exclusive content for the people who subscribe, like a Patreon type of model, you know, that type of stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And too, you know, I think that people who are going to, you know, here's the thing. When I say spiritual gifts, what I'm usually talking about is someone who is, they're usually doing some type of thing in real life already, where they're working either one-on-one with somebody, they're doing some sort of public speaking. As an example, a long-term client of mine is actually a direct voice channeler, sort of a medium. I guess that's how it's known in popular terms. And before she, I was there with her really from day one of creating the online aspect of her platform, but she was already having this like very powerful exchange that was happening between her, like small groups of people, her one-on-one. And so we knew, or I could see it very clearly. I was like, if you take this online with who you are and the energy and the positive attention that she had to bring to it, I was like, this is going to blow up. But had she not approached it with somebody who had been there, done that, and made a lot of these mistakes, even though I wasn't teaching spiritual content in my business, I think that she would have created way too much free content. I mean, and still she does offer a lot of free content. She has a YouTube channel. She's doing, you know, weekly community that really relies on her and she is committed to, but intelligent design of her, you know, her model for it is there's all these other things that are next steps that are options. And so, you know, I don't know that she, you know, was really aware, even though I could see for her, I was like, this is, you know, people are going to want to pay to get on a one-on-one call with you. And she was like, oh, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to charge for that. Well, now she's charging a significant sum to get on a one-on-one call for an hour. And that represents a small part of her business. But that, in addition to some other digital products, sustains the efforts and then is profitable so that she can continue to give at the level that she wanted to from the beginning. But I know that had she just sort of, you know, thought, oh, well, you know, let's do this on the internet, let's do this on YouTube, I think she would have burned out a long time ago, because there would not have been, again, the resources to continue going at that level without there being a healthy, sustainable profit behind it.
Yeah, I think that's the concern, because sometimes, like as a podcaster, I looked at whether or not I should have a subscriber model. Okay. But if I create the subscriber model, my fact that I'm in the top 2.5% of podcasts, I probably lose that ranking, because then people won't listen to it. So in some cases, like you as a musician, like you go on Spotify, even though you know you don't really get money. So it's kind of like the radio. Right. So you get out there and you can reach the whole world. And then you could go and do sync licensing to work on film scores, TV scores, and make money that way. Right. So you make money working on specific projects where you get paid for your composition at a higher level than you could ever get on Spotify or Apple. Mm-hmm. But you still have a free kind of access, like the radio, which is like Spotify and Apple. That's almost like you don't really get a lot of money from that. And you could go to a model where I'm going to pull all my stuff off of Spotify, but then you don't have the reach.
Right.
So then it's like an argument. It's like, how do you have the reach and then still have a niche area of things that you can sell? But you still have to figure out, I guess, how do you actually organize that?
Yes. Well, and you know, to kind of go a little bit deeper into that concept, there, something that I sort of say in general to people who are in this type of niche is that what's coming through you or coming out of you. And now spiritual gifts can mean so many different things. I mean, like I said, this spiritual teacher, author, you know, even people who are in like a personal development space where they kind of feel nervous about like charging people to access information that they feel that they should have. But what I say to these people is, and that can even be like somebody who's a yoga instructor and they want to create like a yoga platform and they're thinking, well, I want people to be able to access the videos and have it be out there on YouTube. So yes, that is great for reach. But what I say usually is that we just have to have different containers, which are different types of ways to consume the information that you have. So for example, my spiritual teacher client, you know, immediately, we didn't wait until she had thousands of subscribers or private clients or private students before we went ahead and self-published a book for her on Amazon. So that's a very low cost, low investment way to kind of get the big picture of who she is and what she's about. So that book then sort of is one option or one container. And again, that's not going to necessarily represent tons and tons of money coming into the business, but it is something that gives her an easy call to action, especially if she goes on a podcast. She's not asking people to come and pay for, you know, expensive one-on-one or anything like that. It's just, hey, if you like this, if you like this, you can read the book. And then inside the book, there are, you know, as she and I were working together, I sort of had identified some sections that I knew because of my previous experience or expertise with online courses. And I said, here's the part that is really like, let's work on this because these are the things that people are going to ask. But how do I do that? How do I do that? Can you guide me through this? Like, how do I make that a everyday part of my life? And so yes, pretty much everything that she talks about inside her online course, she has also talked about in some way in her free content on YouTube. But the benefit of enrolling in the course is that it is sort of a, we just call it a deeper way to work
with
her.
Deeper dive, yeah. It's kind of like if you, if you're a podcaster or a public speaker, right, and then you have webinars.
Yes.
And the webinars, you go and set them up and people have to pay for that, right?
Exactly.
So you're like, oh, gee, you know, one-on-one with Fam Electric Ghost. Like introduction to sound design, because that's what I do.
Yes.
And introduction into podcasting, like 101, since I've been around since 2016. I could have a group of people say, well, how do you get into podcast? We'll come into this webinar and pay for it, which I've been working on thinking about doing something like that.
There you go.
Yeah. I do have monetization because I have sponsors. I have sponsors and I have ways I actually make money already. And so the question is, like, do I add other streams and do I have enough time to support that other stream given what my focus is? So you have to like prioritize, like, how much effort can I put in to this new stream? Is it going to really give me the return for the amount of time I put into it?
That's a good point. And I wonder too, you know, I think that people who aren't already in the podcasting world, or they don't know anybody who does YouTube, and they associate, I think, being on YouTube with being a YouTuber who actually makes money directly from the views on the channel. And it's like, and I want to tell people, it's like, wait. Yes. Yeah. You can make a tiny, tiny bit of money off of views. But even as somebody who never plans to have millions of subscribers, YouTube is just a platform for them to get to know you and then to come to, you know, your website, your offers, your products. And it's really funny. I always have to tell this story. I have my youngest child he's now 13, my son. But from the time that he was in kindergarten or so, I had been, you know, working in online business. And so he very confidently told his first grade teacher that he was going to be a YouTuber. And she said, well, you know, maybe we should just think about some other, you know, some other jobs, you know, that like, and he goes, no. He goes, but my mom does it. So I know that I can do it. And I just wanted to be like, you know, bless his heart. I was like, I don't actually make money from YouTube and I never will.
Yeah. It's like a gateway.
Yeah. And even, you know, as I said, this client that I have now has, you know, tens of thousands of subscribers, and that's more than I have ever had personally. And yes, she makes a tiny little bit of money from that. But I think that the majority of, you know, the regular people in the world believe that it's only worth doing things like this if they think that they can make money directly from
if they think they're going to get hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars. And there's only a select group of people that actually do that.
Exactly. And, you know, and I myself built a business, that never had more than, you know, a couple of thousand email subscribers, never more than, you know, several hundred, you know, followers on YouTube and Facebook in the early days, but I was already making healthy living off of it. And same thing with my spiritual client. And the reason I keep contrasting those two things is because I didn't want to start teaching online business that was only based on my own experience. Like what I say now is I don't only work with spiritual people, but if it can work with someone who is literally channeling angels, it can work for you. Like whatever it is that is your expertise or passion, right? It's like, yes, she is monetized and it's working, you know, I'm proud to say it's working almost better than my own business was at an earlier stage, because we sort of were like confidently navigating how to make sure and ensure that this was profitable as quickly as possible. And so that was happening from the time she only had 50 people following her on YouTube. She didn't have to have the million views.
I think the views kind of confuses people because like I said, like you could be a musician and you could have like, you know, I could have like 100,000 views on SoundCloud, but that doesn't mean I actually make a lot of money. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Like 400,000 views total since I've been on Spotify, but you have to have millions, if not billions of views to make money on those platforms. However, the opportunities I've gotten from having those views, sometimes like the right people see it. So if a person sees it, then I get an opportunity to work on as a producer on an album, or I get an opportunity to do a song for somebody's TV show or video game.
Absolutely. That
actually, if you look at the views, you would say, well, that doesn't look like you made a lot of money, but I made a money from those opportunities that came from my presence.
That's right.
So that's where, like, sometimes these numbers on Instagram don't actually really reflect on social media the true opportunity. Because if you get the right person and you only got 30 views, if somebody gives you a deal and then suddenly you make $100,000 from that one deal,
exactly,
that doesn't really equate to your views.
Yes. And, no, that's exactly right, Phantom. And that is what people don't, they don't understand from the outside. And so they don't really know, like, it's it. And that's why I'm just sort of like hoping to demystify this for people, because they don't really get it. Like, they don't really get the opportunity that is on the internet. Like you said, even just to collaborate and sort of network and meet the right people, right time. Like, for example, this same client that I keep talking about, she, you know, we got her like little by little on bigger and bigger podcasts. And now she's out literally right now filming in Austin, Texas on a documentary for one of those people. And that, you know, that's it's unpaid, but it is going to get her exposure that goes
bigger exposure. Yeah.
The way beyond.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, that's
the plan. Because like, once you get out there, like if you get, you know, I've been able to get a couple Grammy award-winning producers I interviewed on my podcast, a couple of like people around Netflix shows, actors and stuff.
There you go.
So in some cases, like you get that big person and it gives you a jolt. And then you're considered like, you know, because I started a podcast interviewing singer-songwriters and now I've opened it up to a wider audience. So it's very expansive. But I'm able to get a really interesting group of people to come in because people say, well, he talks to interesting people. And so that's the kind of focal point where it's not where at the beginning it was, oh, I talk to singer-songwriters. Now I talk to interesting people. So that opens it up to a whole bigger world where, like, if I stayed in my niche of only songwriters, I could stay there, but it's a wider group now that I can talk to. And it gave me more business opportunities to do things that I would have never thought. But some people, like, they stay in a niche, and that could be what it's good for them. But if you think more expansively and say, whoa, why am I creating this ceiling if I don't necessarily need to have that ceiling because I'm, like, keeping other opportunities from coming to you, like a law of attraction because I'm a Buddhist. But, like, if I put something out there and I don't have these limiting beliefs, I can go further. But if I have a very restrictive mindset, I might be stuck in that channel.
That is so true.
So that's an interesting way to look at it. But when you started to get into this in terms of like the first pitches, like your elevator pitch for what you're trying to do, how did that come about? Like organically, did you have like the full vision for it, or just like over time you started to figure out your what the design of what you're trying to do is?
Well, okay, so that's a really good question. So in my case, this sort of, this direction of having resources and sort of speaking directly to this more spiritual, or I use a couple different words because they don't all maybe identify as spiritual, partially because they're not all necessarily also spiritual teachers, but I'll give you another example. Somebody who I worked with over the last few years, he was in, you know, a very traditional business world. He was being asked to come and speak on stages, like at business schools, you know, talking about his company that he, you know, built and exited and all this. And something that he had said to me was, he said there was a certain aspect of how he invented his product that was very, he really considers himself a visionary. And so people who are visionaries don't necessarily always talk about what that process is like. And for him personally, it was very much like sort of a spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. And so one thing I had worked with him on was how to actually talk about that without it, you know, like
too foo-foo.
it's like that's interesting to him, but he, you know, for students who have paid to go to business school, like they're studying.
They want to be like the MBA class. Yeah, the MBA class. They don't want the foo-foo. It's like, what's the foo-foo? I can't quantify that.
Right. But they're all looking for their idea. Just like he got his idea. And so he was sort of like, do I say that? Like, how do I say like, well, it just sort of like the vision, when I saw the vision, I knew that it was the right thing. And okay. So I was just kind of trying to give you some context of, they don't all necessarily identify as spiritual or directly trying to sell spiritual content, but they are trying to sort of convey something that goes into more of an intuitive area. Or people who are people who are teaching like softer skills, so to speak, like emotional intelligence and working through trauma and personal development. So when I started moving in this direction, here's the reason why. It was because I had been working with this one client, and it was not intended to be like it wasn't supposed to be something that I was going to.
It was not going to be like
my specialty forever. But what I noticed was, due to, you know, getting to know more and more people in her specific industry, because like I said, I had, you know, I was the one sort of, you know, I'm behind the scenes with her. I'm just helping get her placed on podcasts. We had the, you know, we created her courses and her digital products together. She has a membership, and I'm just sort of the one like doing the strategy, because she more wants to kind of go with the flow, right? So we're a good balance for each other. But what I noticed was, people who I met through her, they said to me, where did she come from? Like, how did she get so, like, she really blew up really quickly, you know, so to speak, because you've got some people in a very, doing a very similar thing as her. And they've been out there doing their labor of love for like 10, 15, 20 years, and they have not seen the, you know, success, so to speak. And, you know, again, not to like, I give her all the credit, because she's the one out there. She's the face. She's the face. She's the voice. She's the one who is putting, I mean, she works very, very hard at what she does. But, you know, I said, well, it's because she has a gin, and not everybody has a gin. And that's really speaking to, and what I realized was that people in this category, they are not being well served by other business resources out there. And they're sort of aware of that, because they know, they're just like, ooh, I don't want to use that fear-based language. They don't want to be salesy, but they take it too far. And then they say, like we were saying at the beginning, they're like, well, I'll just create this whole platform, and it's just going to be free forever. And people maybe can donate if they want to, but they don't really have a strategy. And then it gets out of hand. And so when I started talking to some people that wanted me to come and fix some of the problems that they had, and I would say, and here's the thing, Phantom, I was like, I remember I was talking to this one person, like just sort of a exploratory consultation about, you know, I was like, okay, tell me what's up. What are the struggles? And she explained, you know, she's got tons of low cost courses, like that she just had, you know, she's very prolific. She had created all this stuff that she thought that people wanted. And she was like, and it doesn't even cost that much money, and they're still not buying it. And she has a very popular podcast. She has multiple popular books, but she's not seeing that financial success. And, you know, and I listened to all of that, and I thought to myself, this is solvable. But I asked her, I said, you know, just out of curiosity, I was like, were you following like a particular, you know, is there a particular business coach or anybody's you know, you can get into these programs and sort of have this model for different things. And I was just like, whose advice essentially were you taking when you set it up this way? And she was like, oh, nobody. Oh, no. She's like, no, I'm an intuitive. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. So that was when I realized there is a mindset issue when you're talking to intuitives. And I'm not downplaying their gifts at all, because I think that they're phenomenal at what they are actually doing for people. But when you try to apply your intuition to online business and all of these options and platforms, it's like, no, you really need to sort of understand there's a game that has to be played, and it's got to be played sort of correctly. I mean, there is an art to it, but you got to know like how to use the internet and how to use the tools that you have correctly. And so that was why I knew, I was like, well, if they're not being well served by other business coaches, And I knew that too, because I talked to somebody who said, I'm so glad, Jen, that you're working with these people, because we don't know how to help them, because we don't know how to make them instantly profitable on day one. And so their business model is to only work with people who are instantly profitable on day one. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, send them all to me, because I can make them profitable if they understand that they're playing a long game, and it should be a long game, because if it's coming from the heart and if it's,
yeah, it's gonna be a longer game. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the artist yeah. kind of mindset. Like if you're a creative, it's usually the longer term, right? They initially, when you come out there, you're like very indie underground.
Exactly.
And eventually you got to get a good A&R, a good marketing team. And the artists, well, I don't know anything about that. The problem is a lot of artists today, they want to take over everything.
Yeah.
And like if you know, if you're an artist, you should know, it's like, I am not a salesperson.
Right.
I'm not a marketing person.
Exactly.
They're never going to do that while doing that. And they want to, because they want to own their business, they think they yeah. should own that. And that's probably like the first mistake, because like you're good at creating the art, but you're not good at marketing the art. So
there you
need
go.
To find somebody who knows how to do that.
Yes.
It's the same idea across the board, because like once you find somebody that say, well, like I actually want to focus on, like, I don't know how to do the SEO. I don't know how to get on the playlist. I don't know how to get into the gigs. I need to be able to get on the gigs and get on, you know, tours. And like,
yeah.
how do you get that? You've got to get the right agency or the right person or the right consultant that helps you, you know, get the deals on single licensing so that you can do that, you know?
Well, and so I'm glad you brought that up, because since you mentioned that you are a Buddhist, I believe you said that, or that you believe more in the law of attraction, but you also seem to have the mindset where you like, you understand that there are still steps that are taken and tools that can be used, obviously. So maybe I should ask you this question, because this is the thing I'm always trying to communicate to them, is I'm not challenging actually the spiritual aspects of your beliefs, but they do sort of come to it just thinking like, oh, if I build it, it'll all just happen for me.
Well, yeah. It's kind of like that, it's that spiritual mindset. Like I deal with a lot of artists.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if I just put it out there, people are just going to find it.
Yes.
Well, you have to do a little bit more than that, because
they don't realize, and maybe they're a little bit uncomfortable realizing like, oh, like there really is like mastermind strategy that goes behind everything a little bit. Like maybe
yeah, you got to, you know, how did people get, you know, you had all these managers in the yeah. record industry that they go to give it to the DJ in Oakland and give it to the guy in Chicago and get it on. There's like processes to get yeah. that song played, to get it playlisted,
exactly.
to get it in a record store, to get it on a TV show. There's stuff that has to happen that you probably don't have the capability of doing, right?
Yeah.
But that you got to find the right people to do that. So like with any piece of art, you got to find, you know, the artist got to find a place, a gallery that's going to let them show the painting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, and a poet's got to be able to, you know, present and do the live show. But how do you get the publisher to publish your work?
So, exactly.
Like if you just spend time doing the live shows, then like fine, we get this big following, but then the publisher's like, well, we don't do poetry. Well, you got to find, well, how do you find somebody that does do poetry?
Right, right. Yeah. And then just too, I want to say on that topic of just people underestimating what consistency, like consistent output over, and you said you've now done over 1,000 shows. So you know that this did not all just fall into your lap, because you've been doing it 5 or 6 times a week since 2016. So maybe you could, you know, add to my point of view.
Yeah,
on
the idea is if you show up, because the average podcaster stops their show after 12 episodes because they don't see the metrics they want.
I believe
I could have done that back in 2016. And I didn't do that because
yeah.
what happened to me is like, I was brought into podcasting. Some guy asked me, he heard my music, a guy named Rock Tunes out of New York.
Okay.
And he wanted to interview me because of the yeah. stuff I had on Bandcamp and SoundCloud and Spotify. We did our first episode. He liked me so much. We did a combined podcast for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even know we were going to do that, but we liked each other and we did a podcast. Then from there, I went and started interviewing other artists. Because we say, oh, that would be cool if we could actually do a behind the music for emerging and independent artists that never get picked to be on podcasts.
Yeah.
So we started to do that. And
yeah.
then we started to get some bigger names. And then we went from being audio to video. And then, you know, over time, just because we showed up and we, you know, if we go back to our first episodes, we're probably cringeworthy.
Right.
over time, from going from audio, you know, iPhone apps to actually using mixers and high quality mics and all kinds of other stuff, like eventually you evolve. And because you're doing it so long, it's like an athlete that does the 3-point shot. They do like 1,000 shots or 10,000 hours worth of work. You get better. And because you do show up, there's some value into that showing up, because then you get opportunities you would have never imagined.
It's huge. Oh my gosh. I mean, something you said just reminded me that I'm essentially always trying to talk to people, and like anybody who's listening to me in any audience. As I mentioned, I had a business before that I built up and actually sold, and I built that through live video content. That literally my very first one, I did it for nobody. And there were very few people at the beginning. And I wanted it that way because I wanted to practice that cringe-worthy content at the beginning. But, you know, even lately, since the beginning of this year, 2024, and because I have kind of like I said, I sold my previous business. I've been helping private clients kind of behind the scenes. This is the first time that I've done my own new content in a while. And I have kind of started back up some of my own live streaming content. And I'm now back. I mean, even though I have a following and I have people who know me, I'm back to doing live stream content that nobody's really there live. Do I care? No. And I almost call it out every single time. I say, why do I continue to embarrass myself like this? It's because I know that I will make money off of this in the long run. And I'm creating content and assets that are going to serve me for a very long time. So when you said that thing about people stopping, people will stop because they're just like, they get embarrassed. And I'm just always like trying to like be a model of like being willing to embarrass myself, like just to do it, like just for other people to see that if you do this like me, you will also then have the success down the road, because again, I know the benefit of continuing to do consistent content. And again, going back to the spiritual niche, even though I'm not always only talking to spiritual people, I think that they are very disheartened by starting a YouTube channel and uploading this, you know, some type of really good content. And they're like, I'm saying all the same positive, wonderful messages that I see other people in my niche doing, and it's only got, you know, 10 views in 1 month. And I'm like, but what did you do after that? Like, did you promote it in other places? Were you consistently building like a video series? I was like, it's not instant results. It is not instant manifestation. And you should not take the initial lack of engagement or lack of feedback as a reflection on you at all. It is going to require the long-term effort. But if you do that and you commit to showing up, that's what I'm always just trying to bring people to, like, the strategy is to really have your heart into it and be in it for the long-term, and also create other products that help sustain you so that you can continue to show up live and give your best stuff live. So I love how you said, you know, podcasters, especially since I know you know everybody probably in the podcasting space at this point, it's like, don't be intimidated by the fact that it's going to take a long time, because the time is going to pass one way or another.
Yeah, just because, like as you said, because of my consistency, I got into a certain tier where I'm in the, you know, top 0.25 of podcast, just because I'm always showing up.
Yes.
And then the other thing is that, you know, over time, you know, the opportunities you get from just showing up, it's like substantial, because like once you learn some tools, like there are tools that have like propagate this episode to get like 15 versions on multiple platforms.
Right.
I have a website, Van Melectrico's website. I do a blog page for every single podcast. Mm-hmm. Every single blog page has a landing page. The landing page shows where everybody can choose where they want to be. And I don't know, my website is in like the top 85, you know, percent of websites, because it's constantly putting out the blogger version of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little article for every episode that basically has the bio of the person and then the link and then a picture, and then they can go click on it. And it then gets pushed out through their my website's SEO, and they have some AI stuff going on, and it causes it to propagate. Mm-hmm. And then go out to Facebook and go out to Instagram and then hit this other place. And so once you learn how to use some propagation tools and AI tools and SEO, there's a lot of stuff that can suddenly make you hit certain lists and make you become relevant.
And then, that's so true.
And then that's how you can stay in the game. And, you know, it's just sometimes like an episode, you know, YouTube might not be the place one episode really hits. But the Twitch version gets a lot of views, or the Facebook version gets a lot of views, or the Apple version gets more views. That's why I put it on 15 platforms, because different platforms get different views based on who's on. So
you bring up another good point, too, which is that the other thing about one of the other things about this particular audience of people who could be amazing, you know, just the spiritual or visionary content creators. Is that not only are they not good at being their own marketing and salesperson, but they are generally not very tech savvy either. So a lot of the things that you just mentioned would for them be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like what? You know, they don't know how to operate that technical side of the business and or how to even start to wear that hat or how to teach themselves what they don't know when they don't know it. So that was another reason, going back to your question about why, like, how I knew that I needed to, you know, have, I don't know that I answered your question, but the elevator pitch for people in this space, which is, you know, yes, it is possible, but you've got to be willing to set aside your intuition as the primary way that you make decisions. And also just take into consideration, here's what it's really going to take for you to have this, but you can also have it with sort of a very streamlined technical setup. We're not over committing you to resources or technical tools or having to have this huge team of people. I mean, most people just look at what goes on behind the scenes and says, oh, that's not for me, or that's not possible for me. And so I wanted to be the person who told them, if you follow my strategy, and maybe my strategy is not the only one, but it is a model for spiritual content creators to do this, and for it to be quite healthy. I mean, for it to be very, very healthy profit without getting too overwhelmed or having to have a ton of money up front.
In the minutia of all the tech deals. Yeah, because a lot of people will come to you and they say that they have this very high ticket thing that's really designed for somebody selling widgets.
Or
somebody selling.
Exactly.
So, and if you try to fit into that paradigm, it's probably not going to work. Right, and that's the problem. I say a lot of people get turned off because everybody's like trying to go into the same box. And what I think is like that today is like a lot of stuff is very custom. There's a lot of micro business models. Mm-hmm. But we're dealing with a lot of people have these macro business models. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of showing my, I went to school, like I got my degree. I studied like sociology and different things. But the idea is like not one size doesn't fit all. Right. It's like when you go to a therapist, why you go to that individual therapist versus the group therapy versus the 10-step thing. Well, the 10-step thing might not work for you. Right. The 12-step might not work for you. You need an individual to actually listen to your situation and actually hear you and respond to what your individual needs are, rather than trying to be a cookie cutter, one size fits all. That's how it works. And you know, that's where I think people make mistakes, because they think it's like, well, I see this other guy doing this, so I should be able to do that same model and get the same result. But maybe you're not doing that.
Exactly.
You're doing something a little different.
That's, I completely, completely agree with you.
Yeah, that's so hard, because a lot of people, we get in the comparison trap. Like, we want to work with the Joneses. Like, I got to compete with the Joneses, so I should be up there with Seth, with Rogan.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to, you know, I'm in a different area. Right. I'm not going to be where, you know, maybe I mean, that's always aspiration. You want to be like up there, but like, you got to kind of deal with like where you are and figure out how you can handle at the level you're at. And I think it's like I said, you can do a lot of micro strategy stuff and you can still make money.
Yeah.
You don't have to necessarily be at the views or listens of this other person to actually be successful.
That's absolutely true. So something else that you just said, and I guess this is probably true for musicians too. I think especially with, here's the thing. All right. If you have reached a point in your life where you have enough wisdom that you desire to give back, like you want to write a book about spirituality or self-help or, you know, visionary types of things, you know, I usually associate that with a slightly older, you know, demographic. And so not only do they struggle with technology because it wasn't inherent to them their entire life, I think too that there is a struggle to like set aside their preconceived notions about what it means to sort of make it big. Like these people don't have necessarily positive associations with self-publishing a book. Like they believe that like they need to get recognized and be given a book deal.
New York publisher, like yes. Advance and all that stuff, like the traditional route.
Exactly. And so, and that's something too that that I've encountered just in talking to people with the mindset of, oh, I've heard that you can self-publish a book, but like maybe you shouldn't. And I say, yes, you better do it. Because if you want to position yourself as an author, what's happening now is that even for people who get book deals, they are still going to be responsible for a lot of their own marketing. So, yeah. So for example, with my spiritual teacher client, we went ahead and published her first book. You know, I said to her, this does not have to be the first or only or even the best book that you ever write, but we are going to put this out there now because I am positioning you as an author, like an author and a thought leader. And that is what we're going to, you know, we're going to lead with that as your brand and your identity is not just you talking about angels. It's like, well, I've written a book on the subject. That automatically puts you in another category. And it's not even that hard, compared to all the stuff that goes into, you know, building a YouTube channel and building a presence. So that mindset of people a little bit older generation still believes that they're just going to be toiling away and nobody's going to know about them, but they're like waiting for like Oprah to call them. It's like, you've got to take the initiative and get the ball rolling to even be looked at for those opportunities.
Yeah. You gotta kind of create your own like opportunities. Like when you see that person in the elevator and you pitch the story and not be scared to pitch the pitch.
Right. Right.
You know, cause like, you know, that's how it kind of happens. Cause if you go and write the book and then you go and get on a bunch of podcasts and get interviewed.
Yeah.
And then get on a book tour, right. Yeah. And go to, you know, can book conventions and mm-hmm. actually start getting booked as a speaker and then you mm-hmm. speaking piece and you do then you go to webinars. It's like suddenly then you start getting on a track where you can monetize that. You can sell it, you can sign the book and sell it at a table.
Yes. Yes.
You can go on the thing and set up a course. You can have like a website that goes right to your book and then people can do one-on-one consultations and pay to talk to you one-on-one. Mm-hmm. So there's all mm-hmm. kinds of ways to monetize that. And you might not need to have like massive amounts of people, you know, smaller. If you make things right, you can micro strategize a micro business.
Right.
Actually, based on your pricing models, you mm-hmm. might do better than you ever expected.
I couldn't agree more. And just to tie that in, you know, when I mentioned earlier that my client is out filming a session for a documentary that's going to be on I don't know if it's going to be on Netflix, but something similar where, you know, the person is putting together this show and she's going to be, you know, featured on it. She wouldn't have even been able to fund her way to do that without the fact that she has been monetized with digital courses as part of her part of the strategy that I, you know, have been doing with her for the last year and a half. That allows her to say yes to some of those things that aren't paid up front. But, you know, it's like, well, if I meet the right person or I get the exposure.
Yeah, it gives you that exposure. It's like your PR campaign. You know, you got to show up, you know, and do the, you know, you might have to go to the library and the library doesn't really give you that much. But so, like you go to the New York Library or Boston Public Library. Like my daughter got to do a presentation at the Boston Public Library as mm-hmm. an artist. That then led to, she didn't really get paid a lot for that.
Right.
But then she got paid gigs after that that did pay a lot because they noticed that she was there. And then some newspaper reporter picked up at the Boston Globe, wrote about it, and then boom, she gets it. So sometimes like the thing that doesn't really, well, why would I even do that? I'm only getting like that $50 or like,
yeah.
But you do it and then the bigger opportunity comes. It's like 10 times what I got or 100 times what I got.
Yeah.
So like you have to look at the big picture.
No, you're exactly right. And unfortunately, you know, people get sort of like one track minded, even if they are trying to approach things in a smart way and, you know, protect their time. And, but then they'll turn down opportunities that are not literally paying them. Like, well, why would I go on that podcast if I'm not getting paid? Or why would I, for example, I'll give you another thing that is happening in the spirituality niche in general, which is very, very interesting. And I've spoken to many people about this, and even people who are more in the traditional religious world who have seen now the decline in not just younger people going to churches and going to in-person events, but even I think it was sort of like on the downhill of popularity even before COVID, but then even after that, it's like people needed alternative ways to to like gather. And so there is really this huge movement on YouTube that that even people in the church that, again, I've got family members and all kinds of people that I know who have literally been witnessing this. They're like, people are going to, they are looking for their own path on their own time and with words and concepts that resonate with them. And that could look like a lot of different things. They could be looking for like more traditional spiritual content. They could be branching out and like you, Phantom, like, you know, they're like, well, my parents don't know that I'm into Buddhism, but I can go do that because I can go find it on YouTube and start to learn about it on my own. Or even, you know, in this more like woo-woo, like alternative stuff. The things and the communities that are being built on YouTube are very, very powerful because people still want a sense of community around.
They're not always communal groups.
Not about the guru necessarily. It's about the community. Yes.
Yeah. You have a lot of artist collectives and the idea is like you could go book a club and try to play a show. But if you get an electronic music collective, suddenly you can. You go with 10 bands to a show to a place in New York.
Right.
And then suddenly the club books you because you're with 10 bands in this collective. And there then you guys get a good a buzz from that. You go to the next city and your collective keeps on being able to play because you're not going as one person.
Mm-hmm.
You're going as a group of artists that maybe all sound different. It's kind of like this idea, like a CBGB kind of idea. You had Talking Heads, Ramones, Patti Smith, you know, a bunch of different bands. They were all different, but they all played that scene. So they're all kind of in the same scene. So if you can align with like an author scene, because you guys are doing like romantic novels, you're doing new age novels or whatever, you find other authors, they all go to the book convention together, then you all can get on the panel together. You can all get on the, so then sometimes there's a lot of power in numbers if you can find like-minded people that are in the same groups, you know, there's a lot of power in that.
And I mean, and I think, you know, similar thing, it's like there's these even non-YouTube platforms that are starting to build up and say, you know, instead of having to go and like search through YouTube, because there's a lot of, you know, old content, there's a lot of poor quality content, you know, there's these alternative platforms that are coming up that are more trying to curate like positive, uplifting, you know, messages that aren't necessarily religious. And so, you know, I'm getting to know some of the people who are involved in those particular endeavors and efforts, and that gives them sort of like a, you know, community aspect where they're not being as censored maybe as I guess they feel like they would be on YouTube. But here's the thing is that even the content creators that are putting their, you know, they're being given the opportunity to put their work on these alternative platforms. You know, you find them saying things like, well, I don't know if I can like take it seriously or put resources behind that because they literally want to make the money now rather than thinking this is just another way to multiply my efforts across audiences. And it comes back to that thing of them not feeling, not having other ways and other ways to monetize their work that my client has never had to struggle with because she's always had courses and one-on-one offers. But when people aren't comfortable charging something, but then they expect to like make the money off the YouTube views or get paid directly, you know, be compensated by these platforms, it's like that's just unfortunately not the way the internet world is working. Yeah. And it's just, it's like they're, their expectations versus reality are just way too far apart. And that's really unfortunate because there are so many opportunities, but they are expecting to literally have the money fall into their lap now. And so that's another reason why I harp on about creating.
Yeah, the A tier is like, it's so hard to get to that A level tier, right? Where they your YouTuber tier or the Instagrammer tier or the Facebook, you know, top of the line tier. They think because they're there, they're going to get there. It's like, you have to kind of work at it and build, like you're saying, this micro level of the paid content where you're able to say, hey, if you come, you can do one-on-ones.
Right.
You know, you can come and get my book signed. I can give you a signed copy. We can have a group of people that want to talk about this, and that group of people come in, but that's a paid group that wants to talk about this topic. And then the advantage is, I talk to people, but this is now going to be a micro cop group, and we have a free form discussion. So that's real. That's a real thing. And it feels like, oh, I'm being paid attention to. So sometimes people want that as a service. And once you realize that you can actually monetize that as a service, they're like, hey, I'm going to teach you how to do X. And it's going to be a small group of people, maybe 10, 12 people, 20 people.
Right.
Then that you do that enough and you have the right pricing structure, you can actually start doing good and get a good rep.
Exactly. But all they need to do is they need to be a little more confident about leading their audience to the next right step rather than just saying, we're here when you need us, you know, give a donation. It's like, it's too open-ended. It's a little too fluffy. And at times I say to people, I'm like, yes, you want to have a very positive, encouraging message, but you also need to be willing to say some of the things that help people move forward too. You know, it's like that little loving push. Like if they're not willing to do that for their audience and they're not letting me help them do that, I kind of have to say, you know, good luck to you. You're going to be kind of like spinning in circles for a while, and then you will burn out. Like you will burn out, like trying to create a free platform that is not monetized correctly. So that is, you know, I have a pretty specific opinion about it because I care so much, and I hate seeing people give up based on factors that are not really the problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because they're thinking they're going to be on that A-level tier, and they really don't have a strategy to get there. They don't have the SEO, they don't have the right AI, they don't have it. And then they don't really know about that, so they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the idea with like a lot of independent artists, I always talk back, if you go and print 1,000 vinyls as an independent rock musician or any kind of musician, and you go play in New York and you have a merch table and you sign t-shirts and you sign those albums, and you every time you go to a show, you have that.
Right.
You get the income from the show plus the income from the merch. That income is usually greater than your Spotify and your Apple.
Oh, it has to be. Yes.
And it's direct income, and it's coming to you. And less people want to get a cut, you know. We've got some show owners now want to get a cut of the merch. You have to like no. but they're always trying to figure out a way to get the money. But so you just have to find, you know, creative ways to actually make it. And sometimes it's like the micro level stuff that actually starts doing it.
Yes.
So it's very, very cool what you're doing. You're giving it to people that maybe didn't feel that they maybe deserved to get paid for what they're doing, because it goes back to like where their intent is. And, you know, you have to have this mindset for a growth mindset.
Sure.
And that growth mindset also means that you can make money.
And I get it too. I mean, I get it, because there is a balance, right? Like you don't want to be teaching spirituality and be like constantly selling something. Like you can't, like that isn't in alignment. And that's a problem that I have, you know, I've solved that problem, but people have to be willing to hear it. So when that link that is being shown, I know it's on our screen here, but also just in the show notes for anybody who's listening, it is a blueprint download PDF. It's like 25 pages, and I call it, "This is Your Sign." And it is an overview of this business model that I have created for again, you don't have to be literally directly teaching spiritual content, but if it will work for someone who is channeling angels from the fifth dimension, I promise it will work for you. It's just a matter of putting your knowledge, your expertise, the stuff that you're teaching and sharing into the right format so that you are, so that you are profitable. So you're at least not losing money from day one. You are profitable, and that you have the skills for what to say and when to say it so that you can be giving, giving, giving. And then there's this whole automated system running kind of behind everything that just shows people some different options for working with you. You're never pushing them into something that they don't need or they don't want. And you're never telling them that if they don't buy this thing, that they're going to miss out. That's what the rest of the everybody else in the digital marketing world is using, all that scarcity tactics. And it's like, that doesn't work. If you're going to be a spiritual teacher, do not go out there and hit the ground running with that type of language, or people will laugh you off the stage before you've even started. Yeah. It has to be for real. So I'm, as you can tell, very passionate about this. There is a way to do it. And that is something that I, you know, have designed. It is not promising fast. It is not promising mm-hmm. fast, but it is promising sustainable. And it is promising that it can be something that is really your legacy that you're leaving online. And I really care a lot about that. Not that you're leaving the legacy online, but you're using the internet and tools and technology as a tool to further whatever your mission is, and not to see it as like the enemy, even though, you know, right. a lot of people are scared of technology and what it all does and what it all means. It's like, well, some of these algorithms are there to help you if you are willing to take advantage of them in the right way. And this applies even for spiritual teachers. So yes, I appreciate you giving me a platform to kind of go on my soapbox about this, but, that link is going to, you know, show you that business model, kind of show you the case study and the principles behind it, which, I really, truly believe in. And then my company is Every Deer Communications. That's at everydeer.com. And it's deer as in like Dear Jen, Dear Phantom. It's like writing a letter. It really means it's the concept of being very personal and authentic with your audience, even at scale. Because what ends up happening is people get all excited about, you know, having, you know, 100,000 YouTube subscribers and then, you know, 10,000 people on their email list. And they sort of forget to just like write, like continue writing and continue speaking as if you're talking to one person. As soon as they start addressing the world or a crowd, or they start using their corporate world voice instead of their one-on-one personal voice, there's really something that gets lost. Because the human brain, as soon as they think that you're talking to everybody, then they never read it as personal. It's like, she's phoning it in now because she's a big deal. Like, I don't want that to happen to somebody who is a genuinely kind-hearted spiritual teacher yeah. type of person. Because it's like, well, once this actually is working, you don't want to automate away your opportunity to create that personal.
Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah, you don't want to corporatize it to the point where like, oh, the original recipe now 20 years later, I don't like it.
You nailed it. That's exactly it.
That doesn't taste good. It has the label, but it doesn't taste like it did 20 years ago.
Right. So my company is all about just helping you find your thing and then just like stick with that thing, like stay in your flow. And it will take you maybe not fast, but it will take you very far. And then at a certain point, you'll be like, wow, this happened a lot faster than I expected because you stuck to
the
plan. Yeah.
Well, I think what's really impressive is like the fact that you want people to be their authentic selves. You want them to remain like, you know, their vulnerabilities and everything that's great about somebody being an individual, not to lose that and understand that that is actually your advantage. Your advantage is not to clone.
You couldn't have said it better.
Clone what's already out there. Your advantage is to take your unique self and your vulnerabilities and the authentic nature of it and market that and realize that if you still talk to everybody like they're the only person you're talking to, even it doesn't matter what your reach is, if you start reaching a million people, like that's still what they want.
That's so don't forget it. That is exactly it. You get it. You get it. Thank you so, so much for having me on here. This was like, I love how you're able to connect this with the music business. It's like, I love for people to sort of understand that there's so much more that goes on behind the scenes, like without, you know, destroying all of their ideas of like how the sausage gets made. It's like these are businesses and it is something, these are skills and they're learnable and they're very needed. They're really, truly needed.
I want to thank you again for being a guest on the Family Life It Goes podcast. that link is going to be fully active everywhere that we're published. And again, we really appreciate that you're on the show. We love to have new people on the show every day. And this will be out on all the major platforms where you can listen to or watch a podcast by tomorrow. And thank you again for being a guest on the Family Electric Ghost podcast.
Thank you so much.